this episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast.
It's hard to not get swept up in the emotion of this is impossible. You know, this is so unlucky. This is, you know, I just have to sit at home and wait it out. We're not waiting it out. The EPP clients aren't waiting it out. They're making hay. They're making lemonade from the lemons that are in front of us right now. You know?
Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. My name's Royce Turville, and today I'll be interviewing Frank about what property investment strategies will you be focusing on this year. So, hi, Frank. That's the subject. How are you? Are you all right? Enjoying?
I'm good. Yeah, happy new year to you. I think this is our first episode together of 2021. So yeah, good mate. Thank you. Refreshed after a Christmas break and an additional lockdown unexpectedly.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, we're starting with a nice, really easy one for you to work your way into. So yeah, with all this like chaos going on in the world, Frank, what property strategies will you be using this year? Where do we go with that one?
Yeah, so I'll let the listeners in on a little secret. I don't prep these podcasts. I think it's better to be real and to be spontaneous. Royce or Liz or whoever's interviewing me obviously preps all the questions and has an idea. So Royce and I were just chatting literally 5 minutes ago, and I said, Royce, tell me, what are we talking about? What are you going to be asking me questions about? And he said, the strategies you're going to be using in 21. I was like, oh no, that's a really hard one. So I'll be honest, I think that sums it up if I'm honest. And I'll talk you through my psychology and my reasoning and how I'm going to continue to build the business this year. But in terms of the actual strategies that I'll be using, I don't know. I can't say that there's going to be one major strategy. I think that's what I'd start off by saying. There won't be one strategy. I would also add, I'm really pleased we've got 61 strategies to choose from.
Yeah.
Because it's changeable. It's changing so, so fast at the moment. Everything, you know, mortgages are being pulled, rates are going up, rates coming down, announcements about this. The government was saying schools are definitely going to stay open one day, literally, and the next day they're all shut. The Boris was saying, you know, this is going to be generation buy. Really? And everyone's on furlough, you know, compared to generation rent. We're told that the housing market was definitely going to stay open because it was saving or protecting thousands and thousands of jobs. And what they don't say, but what they really mean is, and generating millions and millions in VAT, because that's what it's all about. And then I've read reports today, the housing market might close again, or viewings might be stopped.
Yeah.
It does seem a bit crazy when, you know, your kids can't go to school to be educated, but you can go and have a look around a house with a few other people if you're vaguely interested in buying it. You know, that does seem a little bit crazy. I'm not sure you need to stop the housing market. You could keep everything else going. You maybe just do virtual viewings, but you know, what do I know? So I have to admit, for the last 12 months, I've made prediction after prediction, and I think it's useful to make predictions, and I'll happily share some today, because you have to base your business decisions on something. But we are doing a lot of transactions at the moment. I know you personally are doing a lot of transactions. Like, let's share with the listeners, how many deals have you got live at the moment that you're buying?
Well, we had one just go through before Christmas, and we've got another two going through conveyancing.
Yeah.
But we've got then six remortgages going through. So it's, again, it's not new purchases, but it still involves like a lot of elements of the property market, doesn't it? We've got to still get mortgage companies to do all their stuff. We've got to get valuers to go out. And then, you know, it's just, there's a lot going on. And again, the valuers is an interesting thing at the moment. I know you've seen from the clients we've had as well, we're getting some crazy stuff come back from valuers, like some real.
I can hear homeschooling in the background. It's like a kid's playground, but I think you've only got two or three, haven't you? It sounds like you've got about eight there.
That's just Flynn. He's like the equivalent of eight, I think. That's him happy at the moment. So yeah.
Good on him. It's snowing here. Have you got snow over?
We had a little bit, but it's gone.
I've got white fields outside. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a shame, because they get them, chuck them straight outside, get them to make the snowmen straight away.
Sorry, I was interrupting you.
That's fine. I was just saying it's interesting what the valuers are coming back at the moment. And it's not so much they're being cautious because they're not like saying, no, you know, we're not downvaluing as such or anything like that. They're just picking some really strange things with properties. We had one recently where they said there wasn't enough air bricks and they suspected there might be damp. But and what does a mortgage lender do with that? They're like, okay, what does that actually mean? You suspect there's damp or there's not. So you get a damp report and they say there's no damp, but there's still this thing on the valuation saying there's a, you know, you could do with a few more air bricks there. And it's just like,
that is crazy.
It'll happen. Yeah, but it's just put on like 3 weeks of the application. It's just crazy, isn't it?
And how many is enough air bricks?
Exactly.
you put one more in, is that okay? Or do you need 10 more?
No, it's certainly if you put some bricks. So we've got to then put some air bricks in to fix a problem that we don't know if it is there or not.
You've had a damp report saying isn't there, but
exactly. Ripping up all the laminate in the vendor's house to go, there's definitely no damp there. You can put that back. It's just, it's just little things like that that we're seeing, which is just multiplying the amount of work that's required in it. Because again, I think you alluded to it. Things are so fast changing at the moment, aren't they? Like one day it's hard to plan for things because you don't know what's happening. As you've said, the property market now, we're on the 14th of January. We're hearing rumours that it's going to sort of shut down. But what does that mean? but I suppose in regards to the title, it's a bit misleading in terms of how we look at property, isn't it? Because we don't necessarily focus on the strategy, the investment strategy as such, do we? We focus on finding the vendors. Vendor comes first. So I suppose the question is, because we look at that first and then the investment strategy comes afterwards. So, the question is, do you think there will be opportunities this year to buy property with everything that is going on? So like, let's say this Friday, tomorrow, they shut the property market down. You know, what do you do? What does Frank do then? Does Frank sit there and cry or does Frank do something about it?
I think you know me well enough. I wouldn't sit down and cry, but yeah. Not because I'm unemotional, because closing the housing market actually worked really well for us
exactly.
2020. So yeah. Okay, there's quite a lot I want to pick up on. So first off, congratulations. Most people would say that by completing on a deal, and I know your deals are massively below market value and your cash flow is phenomenal. We've covered that on previous episodes. So completing on a deal in December and having two other purchases going through, do you mind just quickly sharing the numbers on those? Like, what are they worth? What are you buying them for? Just to give people, what kind of cash flow will they produce? Just give people an idea.
Yeah, we can do. So the one before Christmas, that was valued at 160.
Yeah.
So we picked that up for 120.
Awesome.
And that all cash flow. Depends what we do with it. We're looking at the options. But on a single tenancy, it'll make, I don't know, £200 or £300 a month, all day, every day. There's potential to do other stuff with it, a Minimo maybe, and a few other bits. But
awesome.
Yeah, the cake, as we call it, is good.
So was that £200 to £300? So let's call it £250 a month. That's brilliant. Yeah. And of course, by the time you've refinanced that, and I can see why you got six refinances going through, it's because you buy so many below market value.
Exactly.
By the time you've refinanced that, you've got all your money out of it, which is brilliant. So awesome. And what about these two going through at the moment?
So then the other one is valued at £160. And we're buying that at 115. That's the air brick one.
All right.
So that's just going through. And then the other one we've got is actually, we're doing an assisted sale. We were going to buy it, but then because it was the value of it and the rental stress testing, again, we were a bit nervous about it, but it was a motivated vendor who needed some help selling it. And he only needed to do a few bits. So we've done an assisted sale on it. And we've agreed that he gets 200k for the property, and then anything above that we sold it for, we split 50-50, and it sold for 235, and we did a bit of work to it, which was about 5k max, and that's going through conveyancing at the moment. It's going through okay at the moment. Touch wood.
So that one's 15 grand in your pocket.
Yeah.
The second one that you mentioned is 45 grand equity. If you're buying it 1.5 and it's 160. What will that cash flow, that second one, a month?
Again, similar sort of thing, like as a bare minimum, the cake will be 250
Brilliant. So you got 500 quid a month from the other one as well, 250 and 250. And you've got another 40 from the one that completed before Christmas. You've got 85 grand in equity, which is amazing. 15 grand in your pocket plus 500 quid a month more per month. And that's in the last, what, 6-8 weeks. That's over Christmas, you know, which is brilliant. So,
Absolutely. And
the reason I highlight that, Royce, is you're just playing the game that's in front of you. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but for the guys listening, we can't alter what the government say about the rules. We can't alter the what happens to house prices. We can't alter the eviction ban, you know, the fact that that was going to end this Monday, is due to end this week, and then they've just whacked 6 weeks extra on it. None of that. Those are just the rules of the game. But we're stood there in our football shorts. You're a footballing man, aren't you? We're stood there in our football strip, in our boots, and there's a referee saying, go on, get on with it. And you can either go, no, come on, ref, let's change this. Let's change this offside rule so that I can stand next to the keeper. You know, it's just pointless. And so my attitude to this is I stay off social media. I'm like one of the least active people on social media going. I stay off social media. I stay off the news other than to listen for updates to like the economy and stuff. I don't read very much in the newspapers at all because I'm too busy playing the game. I'm too busy going, right, this is the environment that we're now in. How can we capitalize on it? So when they closed the, we touched on this briefly, but when they closed the housing market in inverted commas, they didn't close the housing market. They said estate agents had to close and that viewings couldn't take place. They actually said people could move house with a reasonable excuse. And of course, most of our transactions don't involve anyone moving house anyway. We just buy an empty property on a piece of paper, or we buy a property with a tenant in it who stays in the property. And so this whole notion of, well, you can't invest, of course you can. But the benefit of the government closing the market, and I say this hesitantly because people say, oh, you know, you should have more empathy. I have tons of empathy for people affected. I've said before, my wife and I and our kids, we've all had COVID, we believe. We had it very early on in 2020. We believe we didn't have a test at that time. And so I have, and we've got partners on EPP who've been affected directly, whose family members have been affected. So when I speak about the economic impacts of our business, that doesn't detract from my empathy and my condolences that go out to people who've been directly affected from a health perspective. But the long and short of it is our job is to provide as well as possible for our families and to play this game as well as we possibly can. So when the government made those announcements, that pushed people towards us because all of a sudden the normal market wasn't available to people. They couldn't get three estate agents around to value their property and put it on the market. We even had police officers telling us we weren't allowed to buy properties. We had a counsellor phone in and complain about our leaflet delivery companies delivering leaflets. All were completely incorrect. We acted entirely within the law. We acted within the spirit of the law as well, which was work from home if you can. And if you can't work from home, you can go to your place of work. Well, a leaflet delivery guy can't deliver his leaflets from his sofa. He has to walk around the neighbourhood and put leaflets through people's doors. But the Royal Mail were doing that. We didn't close our postal service in the UK. You know, there are certain things that continue throughout. So I think the changing environment is always good for investors, for sophisticated investors. I'm sat here in front of my bookcase in my office, and there's a book, The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. It's a brilliant book, absolutely brilliant book. It talks a lot about Warren Buffett's attitudes to investing, and I've also read, in fact that's on my bookshelf as well, The Snowball, which is an autobiography, in fact it may be a biography of Warren Buffett. It was written by a woman, I think, but those two books talk about Warren Buffett's attitude to value investing, so buying something because it's intrinsically good value. So let's use that deal that you completed on in December. It's worth 160 as independently verified by a Rick's valuer. So no Mickey Mouse numbers. Yeah. And you picked it up, you bought it for 120.
Yeah.
after all of your expenses every single month, it's going to make you £250 a month. Warren Buffett would want to shake your hand. He'd want to pat you on the head and go, well done, mate. Keep going that way and you'll be as rich as me one day. Because there's no, you know, oh, this is a stock and it's a growing company. It's going to be brilliant in the next 3 years if everyone else buys this stock. There's none of that speculation, hope, gambling. We had Dolph de Roos on the podcast a few weeks ago. He was talking about, you know, hitting the jackpot in Vegas. It wasn't on the roulette table. It was buying the little rubbish house down the road in the suburbs that was just a brilliant deal that was going to cash away forever. And I just, Warren Buffett talks about it a lot, and so does Benjamin Graham. They talk about when the market does one thing, when the market zigs, you zag, and when the market zags, you zig, and you just are counter to the masses, because the masses get into the market too emotionally. So last year, property prices went through the roof. Some of my properties, I was telling someone this morning, I bought a property about 6 years ago. It's almost exactly 6 years ago for, I think I paid 55 grand for it. It's worth about 85 at the time. I sold that last year for 133. That's just a phenomenal capital growth over 6 years. And you have to say, I'm sure people would ask, why were you selling, Frank? Why did you sell stuff? You know, that made me money every single month, probably made me about the same, actually, 200, 300 a month. And the reason I sold it is because there was no reason, no logical reason for that property to have jumped up so much last year. I think we saw a 10% rise last year. I was like, I'm going to sell some of these because we might see a massive drop next year. And I do predict the drop. You know, we're in a recession. How can prices be going up when we're in a recession and the economy's on its knees? People are being made redundant. People are on furlough. That just macroeconomics of that doesn't make sense. I sold more last year than I've ever sold in 1 year. Because, and this does come around to your question slightly, Royce, long tangent, but I want to buy loads. I've set myself the goal of buying 50 properties over the next 2 years. Well, that's going some. That's one a fortnight. Will I? And people go, wow, will you achieve that? I've actually been challenged. I did a training session with some prospective franchisees and someone said, I think you're being over-optimistic in the nicest possible way. I said, and I don't think you're right for EPP, because it's like, who are you to tell me that my goals are too big? You know, it's like, that's crazy. And I wasn't as blunt as that. I actually coached the person for about 5 minutes for free. It was a free event, if memory recalls. But I want to set my goal at 50 properties because that's how great an opportunity I think the next 2 years are. Now, I did think that the second half of 2020 would be a brilliant buying time, but it wasn't. So what did I do? Like you say, did I go sit in the corner and cry? No, I carried on selling stuff, because if the market keeps going up, I keep selling stuff. I had a property that I paid 75,000 pounds for. How long ago would that have been? 3.5 years, 4 years ago. I agreed a sale at 149,500 just before Christmas. Now, that is an amazing jump in capital value. Definitely. And you might be thinking, Frank, why are you offloading these properties? Well, for starters, my portfolio still grew last year. I still bought more than I sold, only just. But I'm going to buy loads more over the next year or two than I have sold this year. But what I've got now is tons of money in my war chest, if you want to call it that, to go do those deals, to do marketing, to use as cash purchases if we need to use as deposits for conventional purchases, et cetera, et cetera. And so just by selling, I think we actually ended up with 6 sales last year, which is a lot for me. Normally I'll sell 1 or 2 a year. Those 6 sales will probably enable me to go buy 20 or even 25 of the 50 we're going to buy over the next 2 years. So I'm excited about this year, mainly because of the changes that we're going to see. And here's why. When we're at the cutting, I will let you ask a question in a minute, Royce. When we're at the cutting edge, which—
Carry on, don't mind me.
It makes your job easier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because we're at the cutting edge, right? We are so changeable. We're so quick to adapt. The word that they used a lot in since COVID is pivot. You know, we're so quick to pivot that when an obstacle comes out, we've solved it within a few days or a week. You know, I sit down with the lawyers, I sit down with the agents, I sit down with the accountants if necessarily, whoever I need to, and I brainstorm it and stuff, and then I'm teaching it literally the next day to the EPP partners so that we're all reading off the same hinge sheet, we're all adopting best practice for that environment at that specific moment. So when things are not changing quickly and they're very stable, that actually makes it harder for sophisticated investors, because let's say you have a stationary environment, let's say nothing changed from tomorrow onwards for the next 2 years, EPP would mop up for the next 6 months, but then there'd be other people and they'd start working stuff out and they'd try stuff and they'd work out what doesn't happen by making mistakes, and lawyers would start to work out what's happening, and then in like month 12, people would start running training courses on it and they go, this is how to capitalize on this market right now. And people would go on seminars. And then in the last 6 months of the 2 years, the newbies that had just been like on the seminars and stuff would go, oh, this is how we do it. I've had this form and I do this advert and et cetera. And so then, so as you go through that 24 months, the first 6 months are really easy. We've not got any competition. We're doing all the deals. The vendors have only got us that can solve their problems. And then in the next 6 months, it gets a bit harder. And in the next 6 months, it gets a lot harder. And in the final 6 months, they've got like three or four offers and they're going, oh, that's not very good. You know, 30% below market value. Well, this person's offering me 15% below. Well, of course they are, because they're going to, you know, put a load of money into the deal and they're happy with just 50 quid a month, et cetera, because they don't know what they're doing. And so it gets harder and harder. That's the reason, the main reason why I love a changing environment, and what Warren Buffett talks about and Benjamin Graham talk about, the fact that when things are changing, you can make more money, you can be more effective, you can capitalize on a changing market a lot easier because there's no competition or far less competition. So a friend of mine just bought an island in the Philippines, no money down, and he said he definitely couldn't have done that if he had been trying to do it 2 years ago, because the market was too buoyant. But now it's a scared market. The masses are running away from investing. They're trying to be safe and button down the hatches. And so those of us that are value investors and are happy with our attitude to risk, are happy to start investing now in a time when prices soon, hopefully, will start to drop. They haven't yet, but hopefully values will start to come down. Then we can really capitalize. And he said he picked this up for no money. He got lending at 60%. The vendor received the 60%, and he's paying them back over a very long period of time for the balance. It's a brilliant strategy. Wow. I've never bought an island before, but it's got a fantastic, he's a trainer, and it's got a fantastic, like an events center on it, like a conference center on this island. And he gets it all in one. It's like, wow, that's amazing. Pretty awesome. I want to buy an island at some point. Yeah. I'm done yet.
Yeah. That's the strategy for 2021 then. Let's get our leaflets out to the islands and go buy one.
Right into islands. Owners of islands. Dear Richard Branson, I notice you have an island. I want to buy one.
Brilliant. What's your thoughts around, I suppose, finance? Because that's something that comes up quite a lot at the moment. I'm hearing people sort of worrying about more than anything. You know, is it going to get harder to get finance, do you think, going forward? Or is it, you think the lenders are going to carry on as they are? Because again, they're in a tricky situation, aren't they? Because they know as much as us. Like what's true today might not be true tomorrow. So what's your thoughts around finance going forward into this year?
Good question. I'm going to say something a bit controversial, I think. And that is, I don't entirely believe what I'm about to say, but that's a good start. but I think for most investors, if you did just adopt this stance for maybe just 10 minutes a day, it would be so powerful. So what I'm going to say is, no time is any better or any worse than any other time to invest in property. And if you just let that sink in for a minute. So if I invest today, or last week, or last year, or 5 years ago, or if I invest tomorrow, or next week, or next year, or 5 years' time, there's no better or worse time. you can't buy now and sell then, and that's a perfect time. Of course, in retrospect, there are, but you never know that in advance. And in fact, Warren Buffett, I didn't know this was going to be dedicated to Warren Buffett this episode, but let's do that. Big fan of Warren Buffett's, by the way. I love his ethics. I love how he's conducted himself and built an empire. And I love his philanthropic approach to distributing his wealth. Great guy that I've read a lot about. He talks about pound cost averaging, or dollar cost averaging, as they call it in the States, which is basically, if you've got a stock, you don't try and buy, and you've got $100,000, for example, to buy, you don't buy £100,000 worth of the stock today and hope that it goes up. Instead, you buy maybe $1,000 of the stock today and another $1,000 next week, and you do that for 100 weeks, because then it evens out the risk of it going up and down. And you notice most people try and gauge the market, kind of try and guess it. But if it's a good stock, it's a good stock. If it goes down in value, it's now an even better stock because you can buy more of it for less money. And if it goes up in value, well, you know, the market's starting to realize what a good stock it is, but it's still a good stock, so keep buying it because of the cash flow off it, because of the return. And it's exactly the same in property. So for me, that whole concept of, and your question kind of presupposes this, you know, is 2021 a good year to invest? What strategies are best for 2021? I'm going to come back to my old saying that isn't mine, but I love it. And that is, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the second best time is today. Now, if you just absorb that for a minute and subscribe to the fact that it's not going to be better to invest in a month's time, and it wasn't worse or better to invest last month, all of a sudden you just want to start taking action. All of a sudden you just want to start buying. You're not going to hold off in case it gets a bit better. My mate didn't say, oh, that island might be cheaper in a year's time. He thought, this is a brilliant opportunity to get a no money down deal. And you buying that property in December with 40 grand off, you didn't go, oh, I might be able to get it for 50 grand off next week or next year. You know, after March 31st, I might be able to get an even bigger discount. No, because if you're trying to judge the market forever, you won't do enough deals. So were you better off waiting and trying to get an extra 5 or 10 grand off? Or did you look at it and go, actually, 40 grand off is a really good return. Let me just get that in the bag, and then I'll try and buy another one 40 grand off, which you've done, 45 grand off. And, oh, let me do another one. Now, if they get better, and you're kind of doing pound cost averaging, except you're doing house cost averaging. You're buying a house every month. Yeah. And if they go down in value, and you can now pick them up in April or May, or if stamp duty is extended, who knows when it'll be, at that point, they might drop in value. But all the ones you've bought in the meantime are going up in value. The market's still rising at the moment. And if they all drop in value, it doesn't matter because you're not going to sell them. If that property that you just paid, I think you said 120 for it, and it's 160 grand property. Yeah. If that becomes worth 110, that would be a pretty major drop in house prices for this year. It's possible, pretty major as it goes. What difference would that make? Absolutely zero difference, because you're still going to keep making your £250 a month. You just won't sell. You only realize that loss if you sell. Another beauty of what you've done is it's a 160 grand house that you paid 120 for. Yeah. So it's not 120 becoming 110, it's 160 becoming 150. So you could still sell it and make a nice profit. But my point is, if the unthinkable happened and it became worth 100, so it dropped £60,000 in value, that'd be like a 35% drop in value. I don't think we've ever seen that. I think that's unthinkable. But if it happened, that's fine. You just keep renting it out, and you'd maybe wait a decade before you did any refinancing or sold it. And so the concept of trying to time the market, I think, is a bit of a fallacy. And the reason I take that massive detour is this. You asked me about finance. Will finance, and all these concepts are interrelated. So will finance get harder over the next year? I believe so. We're already seeing that now. Over the last 12 months, we've seen that. Over the last 10 months, we've seen that. So in times of change, lenders become more cautious. So we can see that in the credit crunch 10 years ago. We can see that now. On the whole, what does that do to the market? It means not as many people can buy property. What does that do to the market? It means there's more supply of property than there are buyers to buy it. What does that do to the market? It decreases values, so prices come down. What does that mean for us? It means we can buy a house that rents for, what's the rent on that 160 grand house that you got for 120?
What is it? It's 650 to 700.
Cool. Let's call it 675 in the middle. So that property that, let's say you find a carbon copy, the one next door to it, right, in 6 months' time, it was worth 160 and now it's worth 140. Maybe you pick it up at 100 or 105, but the rent on it will still be 675. So now your return has gone up. You've got a smaller mortgage on it. You've got less of your own cash in it, but the rent won't drop like that. Rent is not closely related, not closely, it doesn't closely track property values. So when I was buying in 2008, 2009, this happened regularly where I'd make an offer to a vendor and I'd say to the vendor, I can't make you a hard offer. I can pay 75% of what the bank values your property at. So let's get it valued as quickly as possible. And what would happen is I would judge the value based on my best ability then, and the valuer would come around and downvalue, often by like 10%, sometimes even more. And I'd have to go back to the vendor and say, look, we were hoping for a value of whatever, 120, and I was going to pay you 90, but now it's been valued at 110. I can only pay you whatever it would be, 82.5. And so that concept of the prices dropping and somehow that's a bad thing for investors is a fallacy. Yes, financing deals gets harder, so that becomes harder for us, but the deals we're getting are getting better and there is less competition. There's less people around trying to buy the properties, and so it's easier to find vendors, because in a boom market, and this is what we found in 2020, people can just put a property on the market. I think you did this. You put your property on the market and it sold like within a week. Yeah. Yeah. And that's because there's so many buyers out there. Yeah. But in a, and that's because it's a bull market. So it's a growing market. It's a very buoyant market. But when you have a very stagnant market or a bear market, to use the stock market analogy, then there aren't many buyers out there. There's more sellers. And so it becomes a lot easier to find those motivated vendors. So that thought that there are no good times and no bad times for a property investor, I think is really a useful one to bear in mind. Because last year, I've just said it was harder to source deals last year, be it below market value deals and motivated vendors last year. It was, contrary to what I predicted, it was. So I just sold a load of houses because it was really easy to find buyers that would pay above market value. Yeah. And so you just have to play the game that's in front of you, which brings us full circle, really.
Definitely. Yeah, I know. Brilliant. Makes total sense. So you've kind of smashed down some preconceptions of people around, like, I see this all the time. When's the best time to do it? I'll do it. I'll hold off. People held off with Brexit, people hold off with coronavirus, and it's just forever, isn't it? Those people just seem to always never find the right time. So you've explained, like, as you said about planting the tree, the best time to plant one is today. So hopefully that's got through to a few people in terms of, like, you know, just play the cards in front of you and just go and do it. Like, just go and invest in property. And I think we've spoke on podcasts in the past, even your first investments, they won't be perfect by any sense of the imagination, will they? But you'll learn a lot from them. And if you keep them long enough, as long as they cash flow and you do, you know, your relevant stress tests, etc., you'll be okay over the long period of time, which a lot of people struggle to get their head around. Is it worth, so just one of the other things that dawned on me, so great, like, we've got somebody that, like, right, I'm going to go and do it. I don't care. Like, I'm going to take Frank's advice and I'm going to go and buy a property in this turmoil, in everything that's going on in the world.
Who's selling? Who
are they selling? Or they're going to buy an island or whatever it is.
Yeah, Frank said buy an island. Yeah. Where's the nearest island?
So that's it. I'm going to go and buy an island. Now, there's lots of sort of potential challenges and things like that. And again, through when we were in, like, lockdown before, we were still buying properties, weren't we? We were still purchasing properties without visiting them. So is it worth, like, just touching on, again, it's difficult to sort of give the whole process end to end of what we do, but it is, again, people's preconception is you can't buy a property if you can't visit it. It's not true, is it?
No, not at all. And also, people's perception is you can't leave your house at the moment.
That's
You can leave your house for work. And if your work requires you to go and visit site to ensure that the refurbishment of your property continues, then that's an essential journey. You know, we're not trying to game the system. We're trying to protect the profitability of our businesses. That's no less important than any other work function that people are leaving the house for. So yeah, it's very, every time the rules change, I sit down and I read the actual legislation, the actual words of the legislation that's gone through Parliament, because what gets reported can often be not massively different, but subtly different to it. And it's important to have the words in front of you to know what you're allowed to do. None of us want to break the rules and what you're not allowed to do. And some of the listeners might be thinking to themselves, yeah, but that's like, you know, sailing a bit close to the wind, or, you know, gaming the system. That, not at all. The government needs us to be running our businesses, because every time we do a refurb, we're paying 5, 10, 20 people their salaries for that refurb that keeps their families in food and heating and keeps the economy ticking over. Everything we buy helps our GDP to increase. So, and give the government their essential VAT tax. So it's very important to not be swayed by the emotional media, and instead to look at what are we allowed to do, what should we be doing in order to help the economy and able to help reduce this deficit. If everyone in the country sat on their backsides and didn't do anything right now, we'd grind to a halt. Thank goodness there are teachers that will teach the key workers' children. Thank goodness there are key workers that will man our supermarkets and work on the front line of the NHS. Thank goodness we still have couriers that can bring stuff to our houses so we don't have to go to all the shops to buy stuff. You know, there's an onus on us, a responsibility perhaps on us, to take action and perform our businesses or run our businesses to the maximum possible. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. In the last lockdown, we continued to do our marketing for vendors. We had every single step of our process continued, even though we're in lockdown and apparently the property market was shut, in inverted commas, because we continued marketing for vendors. We had vendors contact us. We met with vendors virtually over Zoom or in person if they were willing to meet with us in person, because that's a work function. Just like, you know, if you need to go see a doctor, you can go see a doctor. If you need to go to a supermarket, you can go to a supermarket. So we would go and meet with vendors if they deemed that it was safe for them. If not, we did it virtually. And if it was allowed by the rules at that time, the rules kept changing. And then we would, if we couldn't visit the property for any reason at all, we would do a virtual tour of the property. So we would assess all the works needed. We would direct the vendor on their phone, you know, using Zoom or whatever, to show us the property. We'd then make an offer. We would have the property valued. Now, some of the lenders, all of the lenders continue to value property, but some of them switch to online valuation. So they do desktop valuations or drive-by valuations. We had both taking place. We had mortgage offers coming out during lockdown, and we had completions taking place during lockdown. Now, we might not have met the vendor at the property. They might have posted keys to us. We had one vendor that like hid the keys under a stone, and then we went back like an hour later and picked them up. It all kind of, but that's us being flexible, you know, and they didn't want to meet with someone. They wanted to keep it very distant, which is absolutely fine. So solicitors will working from home, mortgage brokers were working from home. You're absolutely right, Royce. It carries on. If you have the will to continue your business, then you can make it work. But it's hard. It's hard to not get swept up in the emotion of this is impossible. You know, this is so unlucky. This is, you know, I just have to sit at home and wait it out. We're not waiting it out. The EPP clients aren't waiting it out. They're making hay. They're making lemonade from the lemons that are in front of us right now, you know.
Definitely, yeah. And you've kind of touched on sort of my last question there, really. So one of the
you
big
haven't
things,
answered it, Frank, but you've touched on it.
Yeah, you touched on it without me prompting you. And as we've explained, we don't.
Oh, I thought you meant the question you'd already asked. I was like, you talked for 10 minutes, but can you answer it now?
you touched on it at the end there, but it's I think one of the advantages that we have is that so when lockdown came, we were quick to have like find a way to communicate with each other, weren't we, within the partnership. So we were on straight onto Zoom, like, you know, we're on regular daily Zoom calls with everyone. We were having monthly training, full days, training days with everybody. And it, during those calls, it gives people the opportunity to kind of, I don't know, express their concerns and people to discuss it and come back with solutions. Whilst if you think about it, if you're just like a one, you know, you're off doing all of this by yourself and you haven't got any support, then it could be quite a scary world, couldn't it, without that community around you?
I agree, because we talk about the tidal wave of positivity. That's what we give each other. That's how we overcome what otherwise is a tidal wave of negativity. If you if you're not careful, you can get sucked into the doom and gloom and the negativity. And I think being a property investor is a very lonely place sometimes, which is why our community, I'm so grateful for our community, because we've got like-minded, positive, action-taking people that we're surrounding ourselves with, which it makes me perform at a high level for sure. Hearing you tell me you're doing, you know, 3 deals in 2 months plus 6 refinances, I'm thinking, we should be doing more than we're doing. You know, it's good. It's encouraged. It's the positive side of peer pressure, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to wrap up on that note. Fantastic insights as always. You can catch the show notes, which is at www.ethicalpropertypartners.com/podcast. Look out for next week's episode, which is scheduled to run every Thursday. Plus, you'll see the odd caffeine cast every now and then. So look out for those. Thanks to everyone for listening. And thank you, Frank, for your insights. We hope you've all enjoyed it. And we'll catch up with you next week.
Cheers, Royce. Take care, mate.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.